This episode of the E-commerce Playbook podcast is brought to you by Segmetrics. Get clarity on what channels are driving the most revenue for your brand beyond the first purchase and send data directly to Facebook so they can find more of the right customer. Start your free trial at segmetrics.io. That's segmetrics.io, or check the link in the show notes. Hey folks, welcome to the E-commerce Playbook podcast. I'm your host, Richard Gaffin, Director of Digital Product Strategy here at Common Thread Collective. And of course, I am joined, as I always am, by Mr. Taylor Holliday, who is the CEO of CTC. Taylor, how are you doing today?
A little tired, a little hungry, but ready to chat.
Okay, good. That's right, right. Well, so yeah, in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you're sort of down in the more basics right now. But what we're talking about is something a little bit more heady, which is strategy versus operational execution. I'm trying to think of an analogy here. Like, I don't know if eating or something is operational execution here. And I don't really know how that works.
But what you eat is the strategy. Yeah, there's probably, system design questions
Right. So this topic came up sort of in our pre-discussion before we hit record here. We've been talking for a while on this podcast now, almost ever since we began hosting it, about the idea of, you know, building for the long term is now mission critical, right? In the past, you could get a quick return, you could build for short-term profit, and that would have been fine, but that's no longer an option. But one word that hasn't really come up yet is this idea of strategy. We talk a lot about creative, we've talked about brand recently, we've talked about using the right metrics and using more maybe frameworks rather than tactics. But what we haven't talked really is use the S word, strategy here. And so part of our discussion was this idea of maybe I'll frame it this way, and I'll just say this. I should probably find out where I got it, but I received this book in the mail mysteriously recently. This is from Harvard Business Reviews. It's their book on strategy, which is a series of definitive articles, as they say, about strategy. And the very first essay in this book, called What is Strategy? By Michael E. Porter, the very first chapter is called Operational Effectiveness is not strategy. And it's interesting because that dovetails very, very closely, I think, with something that you've been thinking about recently, which is this idea exactly that operational excellence not only is not strategy, it's also ought not to be the main focus, because a bigger strategic lens to view your business is actually what's really critical right now. So maybe speak to that a little bit, Taylor. How did you start thinking about this relationship between these two things?
Very simple lesson has been learned for me in the process of 4x400, running our brands. And if we go back to the very beginning of the way that we structured and set up that entity, okay, it was a holdco where we had a various set of subsidiary brands, and we kept the entrepreneurs on the cap table when we acquired the brands. We wanted them to have incentive to continue to grow the individual entities. And that strategic decision created a foundational problem that we have been dealing with for 10 years. Hmm. And we cannot operationalize ourselves out of that fundamental strategic failure. And then secondarily, inside of one of the subsidiary brands, Bamboo Earth, for a long time, we had a level sort of operational production and capacity that I would say mimics what we have now. Maybe it was a little less efficient, a few more people that you could argue existed in the system that maybe were necessary, but there was a strategic problem around understanding the correct unit economics and efficiency and management of the ad account that caused cash to deteriorate in a negative way. Time and time again, CTC, I've seen very similar ideas pop up where, as much as we want to focus on the how we're doing, what we're doing on a day in and day basis and trying to improve it, make it more efficient, if the underlying strategy that's guiding a trellis that operations gets built on top of, right? If there's a flaw in it, none of the operational excellence matters. And one of the things I experience a lot right now from brands when they come to us at CTC is that they believe the solution to their problem is an operational one. We need more creative. If we just had landing pages and creative, then we would get X, Y, and Z. If we did more, if we had greater output, the problem would be solved. But when I go look in their system, there's a fundamental strategic problem that they either don't understand the specific unit economics and they're running contribution at a negative level inside of their paid media, and they're not utilizing the correct cost controls and things that we would believe that's a strategic flaw that's actually causing any amount of creative to sort of be spinning in circles. A lot of times we see like they're selling the wrong products. Their ad account's driving because it's on lowest cost to too low of AOV items, which is deteriorating their margin. There's an inventory purchasing problem that created a need for massive discounting. These are all strategic initiatives that sort of create operational problems. Now, I'm sure some of this is a little semantics and people are going to argue, oh, that is operational excellence would be forecasting accurately. And okay, so there's probably some blurred lines where strategy and operations begin. But I really believe and have personally experienced that a great strategy is the foundation that premeditates and necessitates operational excellence. Like you cannot disassociate these things. Most brands, I think, because, especially, this is the last thing I'll say and I'll kick it back to you, is I believe that the ecosystem of Twitter and D2C culture is so built around the operator as the hero, the archetype persona. Right. And operators, by definition, are people who just output and they learn through trial and error and they evolve. And we've elevated that premise really high, and they're the loudest voices in the community. But often that the amount of errors that they make along the way reflect poor strategic thinking that could be offset with wisdom and experience and knowledge. That I think if we stopped a little bit and created more space for a great strategy, and of course there's like a trial and error that gets layered on top of it, I think we could be in a better place.
Yeah. So I think like one thing that's kind of interesting and something that you pointed out in our discussion as well was that a lack of a strategy ends up being a strategy in and of itself, correct? So the idea, like maybe the concept that we can tie this back to is this idea of like a strategy, to my mind anyway, begins with establishing your core business goal. Like, what are you trying to do with your business and why are you trying to do it? Which is a question that not many entrepreneurs can answer with, maybe can't give like that's a right, definitive right. concrete answer to, other than maybe I want to do X revenue because why not? And so I think what happens is that your strategy actually always ends up being to be short-term profitable as often as possible all the time. So even if you have no articulated strategy, your strategy probably, if you're coming to us and saying like, hey, we just need a lot of creative, your strategy probably is just functionally, it's de facto to hit your profit numbers this month or something like that, or hit your revenue numbers, whatever, right?
You are so right that this begins very much at the root level of what is the entrepreneur doing this for? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the business strategy here? What is the end that this whole thing serves? And the reality is that early on, it primarily just serves like survival, like just the ability to generate a life and live. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that sort of need gets met and you're left with this bigger question about like, okay, what do I want? What is enough? What is the outcome? Is it a $1 billion sale? Is it that this exists forever? Is it an experience that I'm having? And most founders, myself, many days included, are not clear on what the point of this whole thing is. And the sort of overall operations of the thing reflect that ambiguity. And so you're right. The strategy begins with a foundational purpose that the business exists for. And without that, you will run in circles many days doing all sorts of things operationally.
Yeah, yeah, right. And I think it's also important to note that there's a couple different tiers of that main strategic goal. So one is like maybe the stated... So I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs, if you were to ask them this question, they would sort of give the thing that's like maybe on the our mission page or something on their website, right. Which fine, like that's probably part of it. But also like, I think to that point, like that startup phase, your strategy or your goal actually is to survive. That's not going to be on your website. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
right.
to at
right.
least to yourself, be honest about that. But at this point, like what is your, now that things are maybe more locked down for you, like what are you trying to do with it, right? What, you know, yeah. what sort of is the basic thing that you're trying to make happen? This episode of the E-Commerce Playbook podcast is brought to you by Segmetrics. Segmetrics demystifies your e-commerce funnels, helping you make data-driven decisions. While your e-commerce store's built-in analytics are great for measuring sales and cash flow, optimizing your marketing campaigns requires more data. And if your store offers subscription products, understanding your true lifetime ROAS is crucial for allocating your marketing budget across channels. Segmetrics makes it easy to understand your customers, leads, and prospects, and how they behave throughout your funnel. With features like lifetime attribution, you'll be able to see where your long-term customers come from, going beyond individual purchases. Moreover, Segmetrics enables you to feed conversion data back to ad platforms, optimizing their ability to send you more high-quality traffic. You can even share subscription purchase data or recurring payments. Your store can leverage Segmetrics' extensive library of over 90 integrations with popular marketing and e-commerce tools, including Shopify, WooCommerce, Meta Ads, Google Ads, TikTok, Klaviyo, and more. Discover how Segmetrics can help your e-commerce business grow at segmetrics.io. Or follow the link in the show notes to book a personalized demo with one of Segmetrics' marketing optimization experts today. So I want to read this one little bit from this essay specifically, which I think is really interesting. Okay, so this is about the contrast between operational effectiveness and strategy. The myriad activities that go into creating, producing, selling, and delivering a product or service are the basic units of competitive advantage. Operational effectiveness means performing these activities better, that is, faster or with fewer inputs and defects than rivals. Companies can reap enormous advantages from operational effectiveness, as Japanese firms demonstrated in the 70s and 80s with such practices as quality management, continuous improvement, blah, blah, blah. As all competitors in the industry adopt them, however, the productivity frontier, right, the maximum value a company can deliver, shifts outward, lowering costs and improving value at the same time. Such competition produces absolute improvement in operational effectiveness, but relative improvement for no one. And so that's kind of
that's the core premise
there, right? Like if everybody, especially as you're pointing out too, like as AI gets better and better, everybody is going to become equally good at operations, or at least at the sort of various inputs that go into operations. But the differentiator is going to be, what are you doing with that operational effectiveness?
That's exact. So I put out this tweet the other day that production costs, think of it as a proxy for operations, are on a freight train to $0 and infinite volume. Yeah. You're going to be able to produce a million ads that are beautiful in an instant by speaking to a system, right? Like that's customer service reps. They're just going to give beautiful, thoughtful answers in any tone that you design, in any voice that you want on the phone, at basically zero cost, right? That's like the direction of all things operations. Well, given those tools, okay, what will separate the winners from the losers in a world of perfect operational efficiency of something? Well, it's going to be the strategy and the utilization of it. Think of it as like right now, the big term is like prompt writers. Well, prompts are functionally strategic utilization of a tool. So if the example of the guy that blew up creating Hustle GPT, right? He writes this prompt to ChatGPT saying, "You are now Hustle GPT. I have $100. We're going to, I'm your human liaison to the physical world, and we're going to go make money." And it blows up. He gets 20 million impressions. He's on TV, he's on podcasts. Same tool, same capacity for output, strategic utilization of it that separates him from anybody else trying to make a tweet thread about it. And this is the case, is that like when you get to this level where tools are commoditized, right? Like I think that so much of the e-commerce stack, this is what has happened, is that Shopify fundamentally in many ways commoditizes operations, right? Like they take what was a really laborious process of building a cart and integrating all of these features, and they basically they in the process of arming rebels, they commoditize it and make it available to everyone at an equal level. And I think that this is often actually seen as like a value proposition for a business, but that cannot be your competitive advantage. And Michael Porter, it's funny, I didn't realize he was the first person you were referencing there. So he's famous because he wrote a book called Competitive Strategy, which is one of the ones I reference in my post. That's like one of the first books you read in business school. And these are the kinds of points that he's often referring to. And you'd find, it's funny, I got an email from this SEO white label partner the other day that was sending me an email. And the value proposition was to me, our service is so easy to set up that we are powering the SEO offering of hundreds of agencies. And I was like, there is nothing in the world that could be less of a value proposition to me than that. Same service as everyone else at a great price. It's like, that is the definition of operational efficiency as your competitive advantage that I think is like doomed to failure as a strategy, right? Because you cannot fundamentally at any point offer any difference between me and you. And when that happens, you know what the differentiator is? Price. And that gets driven all the way down to zero because somebody will be willing to take less and less and less and less margin on the same service because their cost is functionally zero if it's an outsourced thing, until eventually the category just disappears. And so in this moment, to actually be strategic about the way you design and implement and build product, the way you think about deploying your media is all where the advantage lies, in my opinion.
Yeah. So maybe let's go into what the components are of a good strategy, or of just strategy at all. And I think there's an interesting side discussion here about like why emphasizing strategy over operations is sort of seems kind of controversial still, or not like super popular, but maybe we can get into that later. Because I think, yeah, so let's start just talking about what strategy is. So in this particular essay, what Porter talks about is essentially what he's talking about is positioning yourself as doing things differently or for different people, really, than your competitors. And so simply it's yep. like, yeah, this is just sort of brand positioning 101, which is like, for instance, X company, we only serve the niche needs of a very wealthy clientele, or we serve right. the niche needs of a broad group, or we serve the broad needs of a very niche group. Like there's sort of these different right. categories that it falls into. And then of course that plays out into brand strategy. Like who is this, what is this look and feel for? And of course it's sort of all comes down to essentially, strategy requires you, here I'm quoting, strategy requires you to make trade-offs in competing to choose what not to do. Some competitive activities are incompatible, thus gains in one area can be achieved only at the expense of another area. For example, Neutrogena soap is positioned more as a medical product than as a cleansing agent. So you say no to sales based on deodorizing, which gives up a huge amount of volume, and you sacrifice manufacturing efficiencies. However, Neutrogena is a very successful brand because they position themselves and they strategically give up certain things. And maybe that's part of what the difficulty is, or the reason why it's just sort of so knee-jerk difficult to make that type of decision, because you're saying no to a huge amount of sales volume.
That's right. And there's a level of insecurity in obligating yourself to strategic thinking, which is that it forces you to have an opinion ahead of time.
Yeah.
And there's this... idea that the more nobler task is just test and find out. I think that in many cases, a lot of that has been done already. Like you don't actually need to go replicate work that previously exists to answer questions. You need to spend some time thinking and to lean on the mountains of people that have come before you, to stand on some of the shoulders of giants by taking the time to think about it. And this is what I'll give you another example for me is that, so building CTC, for many years, especially like last year, when we got into our like peak of size, I felt like I was like a wanderer in this foreign wilderness, outer space, in a place that nobody had ever been before. And everything I was trying to do felt so novel, and I was so insecure, and it was all try and failure. Then I found this book called Managing the Professional Services Firm. And reading it was like a portal to a new world where everyone had already experienced my problems. And there was this discovery that there was nothing novel at all about my circumstance, but instead what it was that I just hadn't tapped into or interacted with the people who had that experience in a way that could share then with me wisdom and strategy for dealing with it. And so here I was just sort of flitting about in this world. And I think this is why so often you'll see these entrepreneurs that like when they get into these like peer groups, it feels like this like magical thing that they have found a space where people share their experience as if they like couldn't, like that they've discovered a new land, mm-hmm. right? And the reality is there's almost nothing new under the sun, especially with what we're trying to do as business builders, you know? And so there's a lot of wisdom to be gleaned, and there's a lot of that formulates better strategic thinking about how to do what you're trying to do versus just trying more things, space to stop and reflect.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's like, because I remember the earlier days of CTC when I was there the first time, like that was certainly the attitude, which was like, let's test and find out. Don't go off your sort of initial gut instinct. Test and see what works and you'll find out. And if there's definitely value to that, because oftentimes our gut instincts are sort of poor barometers of what's actually true. However, I think what we have sort of discovered is that like, yeah, you have to have a reason that you're doing what you're doing before you start testing. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere because there's not really a direction that you're headed in the first place.
I think what you're saying is like the idea, if there's any value to us as an agency at all, okay, if there's any value at all, it would be predicated on the idea that 12 years of doing this across tens of billions of dollars in revenue would lead to the formulation of strategies that could be deployed on your behalf.
Yeah.
And if that isn't true, then there is no value of us other than our operational efficiency and excellence relative to some other place that you can source it. And so there certainly has to be. And I know that when I watch people crave advice and wisdom from people who have experienced things like I built and sold Native deodorant. And so Moiz Ali is an amazing source of knowledge, or Patrick from Supply sold his business. And so he's going to now coach and provide wisdom. I know that we understand this premise, mm-hmm. that the ability to provide from experience strategic direction about what you should do is of the utmost value. But yet somehow there are moments when we just sort of toss it aside, rush into an instance with the idea that the only thing that matters is the ability to do it and then to learn and to refine and to do it again. And mm-hmm. again, it's not to say that there isn't merit, but there is so much opportunity to be able to lean on and provide a strategic roadmap on which great operational efficiency can create a better impact.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think your analogy about the scaffolding makes a lot of sense. Like if you're testing and sort of running or trying things, but there's this scaffolding is rickety or whatever, then you're just going to collapse anyway. So it just like doesn't matter ultimately. Even if you're sort of gathering a lot of learnings, if like the initial premise was wrong, then there's no point in doing it. I think another thing that like, or another way practically, like I feel like this plays out a lot, and I deal with this in sort of my capacity or my role as the person who sells digital products for us. There's this idea that like we think about our distribution channels. We think about essentially the framework that we have in place to distribute content, to sell it. For instance, what's on our website? What, you know, let's look at our email list. What ads can we run against this? Whatever, right? And a lot of the times the discussion, and you know, we do a pretty good job of correcting ourselves on this, I think. But I found this to be the case when I was working for clients as well, is that we're talking about landing pages a lot. We need a landing page for this. We need a landing page for that. We need it for this. We need an ad campaign for that. But no discussion right. of what should be on the landing page. What should the landing page be about? What are we saying right. about this product? And I right. think that's right. like that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you can't operationalize, that you have to sit down and be vulnerable enough to say, like, we are going to bank on the idea that, say, this product is only for X person, and we're going to think about the way the look and feel is and what we say about it, because we believe this is actually like the value proposition. And that's where you start. And then you say, oh, okay, well, we know that like a landing page that looks like this is helpful or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we're in the middle of this right now too, Richard, like, because it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the point? And I think what you're describing is exactly it, is that it's sort of like writing an outline for a presentation before you do it. It forces you into this question of like, why, what's the goal? What's the intended action? What's the outcome that would mean it's successful? That sort of strategic roadmap to the operations is important. And I think about like our funnel we're running right now with the DTC Index. So for those of you that don't know, CTC has a tool that's like an aggregate view of the industry performance called the DTC Index that we use as sort of a tip of the spear to one, provide a product and opportunity for people to view data in a way that connects CTC to that information. But it also sets up an ability for us to enter into conversations to understand more of what is the kind of data that people are looking for. And so there's a strategic plan that sort of first gets developed around how to use products in connection with an overall brand presence and idea of what CTC is and who we are and how we want to position ourselves in the world, that then leads to a set of operational actions that now, yeah, we have to go be excellent at, and we're going to test and refine, and we're going to A-B split test and try different ads and da-da-da-da. But it all sort of is rooted back to what is CTC 2.0? What is the new open identity? Who are we trying to become? Therefore, what are the ads and message and funnel that would work? Because it wouldn't make sense to just go say that the only rule is that the primary value proposition is it has to work, because if that thing that worked wasn't connected to who we were and our value proposition more broadly, our operational systems, you would break the thing, you know, altogether.
Yeah, and it all hinges on what your definition of the word work is. What does it mean for something to work?
Right.
And I think all too often we let other people give us the answer to that question, which is to say, like, is our CPA good or something like that? Or is like ROAS good or right. whatever? And like that can't be the thing is working. You have to define that for yourself based on your specific goal. I think like that's this, right. yeah, that's right. Using ourselves as an example is a great idea, because I think like what from, you know, my perusing of this particular article and then my just general experience, figuring out what your strategy is a question of figuring out who and what you're going to say no to, right? And yeah. I think I find this when I used to run, we had a short-lived branding department here at Common Thread Collective. And one thing that I found really interesting is that in our conversations, we would have these sort of we would have the kind of the client go through this exercise where we would say, our brand is not these adjectives. Our brand is these adjectives. And
that's right.
Despite what I thought, the thing that was most helpful was what we are not. And explaining gave us a lot of space. Like if we can say we're not going to go there, then we have the room to create something new and something valuable in the space that's left behind. And so I think like for us, like it's a question of like, who's not a good client for us? And we just have to say, I'm sorry, we will not accept your $20,000 this month because it's just not going to work for us in the long run. And that's a difficult decision to make, but it's totally necessary.
Yeah. And it is so critical to actually being able to compound the value of your thing over time by repeatedly moving in a consistent direction and to bring people on board with the ideas in a way that they can understand and participate in as employees, as customers. It's really, really helpful. So strategic thinking, underrated production, possibly commodity and more so into the future. So what is your business strategy? We'd love to hear how you think about this, or are we just highfalutin, just nonsensical
philosophers
on the mountaintop here? Let us know.
Exactly. Cool. All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us. Take care. We'll see you next week. Thanks again for joining us on the E-Commerce Playbook podcast. Please remember to rate and review. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. That stuff always helps us out. And since you've made it all the way to the end, I want to use this as the opportunity to announce something very special. So next week, and I'm going to say this now, and Corey can cut it out if this ends up not being the case, but we are releasing a new product. And as director of digital product strategy, I'm very excited about this. And it's called the e-commerce diagnostic toolkit. And so the idea here, speaking of strategy, is to give you a sense of what your brand's biggest weak points are, what your strong suits are, and then with that sort of combined knowledge, give you a sense of what your biggest opportunities are. So essentially what it is there's a manual that guides you through exactly what the metrics are that we're going to be measuring, the philosophy behind what we're thinking about, how it fits into our broader framework. And then it'll also have an interactive assessment portion where you enter really specific data about your brand in. And at the end, it'll spit out a special number that we've invented called the growth quotient, or GQ, which will give you a sense of like what the growth potential of your brand is right now. And then it'll break it down into the subcategories of exactly what you can do to affect that number, to bring it up, and to pursue those opportunities right now. So that's coming out next week. We'll have a special podcast about it next week as well. But look out on that particular podcast for a special offer code just for our podcast listeners to get a little bit of a discount on it as sort of an early bird offer. We're really stoked about it. And we look forward to seeing you in the back end of that survey. Of course, you can always drop us a line at podcast@commonthreadco.com if you have any questions or comments about the world of e-com. So we hope to see you there. But until then, have a good one and happy skipping.